Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you've been watching the headlines at all, you know the biggest story right now, I mean, maybe the biggest story of 2025, is the sheer, just breathtaking flow of capital into artificial intelligence.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere. We're talking trillions of dollars being funneled into a really concentrated group of tech firms all building this infrastructure for our AI future. The momentum, it just feels unstoppable.
It does. And that momentum is precisely where our deep dive has to begin.
Yeah.
The sources you sent over really highlight this powerful central paradox.
Okay.
On the one hand, you have this rapid growth, this unprecedented investment sparking just mass optimism. But on the other, a lot of established financial experts are, well, they're sounding an alarm.
An alarm about what exactly?
They're warning that all this growth is masking some pretty significant systemic risks. Hidden vulnerabilities that could challenge the stability of the whole market.
That's fascinating. So the risk isn't just about whether the tech itself works, but how the financial system is, you know, handling all this money. So our mission today is to take a really detailed look at the AI market landscape, maybe identify some historical parallels that tell us where we might be in the cycle, and most importantly, pull back the curtain on the fragility behind all the hype. And we'll be using your research as our map.
Let's do it. I think we have to unpack the scale first, because the numbers themselves are just, they're staggering.
Yeah.
And they really lay the groundwork for understanding the risk.
Absolutely. When we talk about financial commitment, we are way past the point of casual investing.
Oh, yeah.
The projection is that U.S. AI-related investment is set to exceed $100 billion this year. Alone.
And that's just the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
If you look globally, some estimates are suggesting we could be approaching $200 billion by the end of the year.
That kind of concentrated capital is, it's just so rare.
It is rare, but, you know, the total dollar amount, while it's eye-catching, it's actually secondary to how that money is circulating.
Okay, what do you mean?
This colossal investment isn't dispersed widely. It's flowing through a small, really tightly controlled ecosystem. And that introduces what our sources are calling concentration risk.
Concentration risk.
And that's the foundational problem. It leads us directly to this concept of closed loop spending.
Closed loop spending. When you hear a term like that in finance, you instinctively know it's probably not a good thing. How does that loop actually operate?
Well, think of it as a really specific interconnected network, a club basically, where money is only exchanged between the members.
Okay, give me an example.
Sure. A major venture capital arm of, say, a big AI software firm gives financing to a specialized chip startup. That startup then uses that funding to buy advanced chips exclusively from the original parent company.
Ah, so the money never actually leaves the orbit of this small group of firms.
Exactly. Company A gives capital to Company B, and Company B turns right around and uses it to buy Company A's products. It's a circular mechanism.
And that artificially inflates asset valuations.
It has to. Because the spending isn't being validated by, you know, organic third-party demand from the real economy. It's internal capital driving the reported price and what looks like revenue growth.
Which makes it almost impossible to figure out the true value of the technology if and when that cycle eventually breaks.
It does. And the consequence of this closed loop is this rapid, extreme concentration of risk across the whole industry. These firms aren't just partners. They're financially interwoven.
So if one of them gets into trouble?
If sentiment shifts or if regulators land heavily on just one major player, the dependency in that loop means the contagion will be swift and, frankly, pretty painful for the entire sector.
And we know regulators are watching this like a hawk. The Financial Stability Oversight Council, they've explicitly flagged vulnerabilities tied to this exact boom. But what really stood out to me was the observation that markets are showing markedly increased correlations.
That phrase is a five-alarm fire bell for systemic risk.
It sounds like it.
I mean, historically, you mitigated risk with diversification.
Yeah.
Right? You held stocks in different sectors,
energy,
healthcare, tech. And if one went down, the others might be stable or even go up.
Because they had different risk drivers.
Precisely. But when correlations become markedly increased, it means assets that should move independently are now all moving in lockstep. It's a direct result of this closed-loop financing.
So diversification isn't really a safety net anymore.
The refuge is dramatically shrinking, especially if your portfolio is heavy in these AI exposed sectors.
Mm-hmm.
The factors driving one company's price are the same factors driving all of them.
This level of financial fervor, it naturally makes you think about financial history. I mean, have we seen this kind of setup before?
Oh, we absolutely have. And to analyze it, We really need the framework from the economist Charles Kindleberger. He outlined the classic sequence of a financial mania.
The five phases.
Right. Displacement, euphoria, mania, distress, and finally, revulsion.
And if we're looking at the current AI moment through that lens, where do we land?
Well, the displacement was the breakthrough of large language models, of generative AI itself. The euphoria was that first burst of capital back in 2023.
Yeah.
But according to historians like Neil Ferguson, the current AI market is now, and I'm quoting, firmly within the mania phase.
That is a critical label. But wait, I have to push back just a little on that.
I swear.
Unlike, say, the Dutch tulip mania or even the dot-com era, AI produces real, tangible efficiency gains for businesses right now. It's transforming processes today. Doesn't that genuine tech displacement justify some of this valuation? Does the mania comparison really hold up?
That's the essential, difficult question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Separating genuine innovation from financial excess. And you're right, the technology is undeniably transformative. But mania isn't defined by the technology's quality.
It's defined by investor behavior.
Exactly. In the mania phase, you see this excessive optimism where spectacular future revenues are treated as near certainties today. It results in valuations that demand decades of absolutely perfect execution.
So the behavior is just outrunning the balance sheet.
It is. The investment enthusiasm consistently outstrips the underlying measurable fundamentals. It's investment based on the dream, not the current proven earnings. We saw the same psychology in the 1920s stock bubble and the 90s tech surge, that feeling that the rules have changed forever.
That this time is different.
That belief is the defining psychological trap of the mania phase.
And we're seeing specific, vivid markers of it today.
We are. The source material points to things like advanced chip orders being placed years ahead of when a customer could possibly use them.
Right.
Or near-weekly partnership announcements that seem designed more for market headlines than for immediate functional value.
Mm-hmm.
And you see entire legacy sectors being forced to realign just so they can tell investors they're part of the AI theme.
It's that pressure to just be seen as participating that defines it.
Yes.
And here's where the paradox gets so dangerous.
Mm.
History shows the mania phase feels the safest while you're in it. Because the market's rising, everyone else is getting rich, the riskiest choice feels like stepping away.
And that illusion of safety is the core of the fragility we have to recognize.
Yeah.
The sheer narrow concentration. Everyone piling into the same few stocks, it just mathematically increases the systemic fragility of the markets.
It's like everyone building their house on the same increasingly narrow foundation. The whole neighborhood is vulnerable to the same earthquake.
That's a perfect analogy. And when you combine that with the closed-loop financing we talked about,
mm-hmm.
where firms are tethered together, you create these powerful feedback loops.
So one bad announcement from one company.
And the entire intertwined sector immediately feels distress. This is why these soaring AI indices, while they give off this sense of, you know, seeming stability, are actually masking vulnerabilities that could trigger rapid, violent adjustments if that investor sentiment subtly changes.
Which brings us from structural risk to behavioral risk. You call this action bias. And this affects everyone, from a CEO deciding on R&D spending to an individual investor trying to manage their savings.
Action bias is that powerful compulsion to act, even when the rational choice might be to wait, or diversify, or even retreat. In this context, it means corporate execs and retail investors feel this intense pressure, social, competitive, to maintain maximum exposure to the winning theme, which right now is AI.
Even when the risks are becoming pretty obvious.
Even then. The fear of missing out, you know, it just overrides basic risk management.
Which is what makes the inevitable correction so much worse.
Precisamente. That behavioral pressure intensifies the volatility. When market reality finally hits disappointing earnings or regulatory action, whatever it is, the adjustment is amplified.
Yeah.
Because so many people felt they had to be in this one single theme, the rush for the exit is just incredibly crowded.
It's a really compelling case for the fragility of it all. So against this backdrop of concentration and behavioral pressure, prudent planning means you have to look outside the dominant tech cycle for some stability.
That forces us to shift focus dramatically. We have to move away from these high beta tech assets to assets the sources cite as potentially providing that stability.
Mm.
Specifically, long-standing monetary metals. Gold and silver.
Contrasting assets in almost every way.
On every functional way.
Yeah.
And that contrast matters so much right now.
Why, specifically? What makes them so different in this context?
Because they operate completely independently of the current tech cycles and those circular financing schemes we talked about. Their value is driven by things like monetary policy, inflation, geopolitical stability, not the quarterly earnings of a chip maker.
They're non-correlated.
Genuinely non-correlated.
Mm-hmm.
And critically, they carry virtually no counterparty risk, which is a key requirement for safety when you think the system itself might be fragile.
And the data suggests this isn't just a hypothetical flight to safety. There are structural trends in these assets that started even before the current AI peak.
Absolutely. The research highlights some specific data here. Gold, for instance, has broken out of what was an 11-year relative performance base against equities.
Okay, let's just clarify that term for everyone listening. An 11-year relative performance base breakout. That sounds technical, but what does it actually mean for investor confidence?
It means that for over a decade, gold's performance compared to, say, the S&P 500 was stuck in a defined range. Breaking out of that range suggests the market's long-term calculus of risk and reward has fundamentally changed.
So investors are basically saying that gold stability is more valuable today than it has been for the last 10 years.
Exactly. It indicates a deep-seated loss of confidence in the sustained stability of these high-growth, concentrated equity markets.
And what about silver? It's always a bit trickier with its dual role as a monetary metal, but also with huge industrial demand.
Well, silver is poised for similar momentum gains. And that dual nature actually makes it more resilient. It gets the safety hedge benefit like gold, but its huge industrial demand for solar panels, electronics, it supports its value even if financial markets get volatile. It has a diversified demand base, which makes it a powerful anchor.
So we've mapped the concentration, we've seen the historical parallels, we've identified some stability anchors. What does this all mean for the big picture? Let's start with policymakers. What a challenge they must be facing.
It's monumental. For them, the rapid spread of AI demands refined governance, regulatory transparency, and just more robust risk management. The challenge is mitigating this systemic risk, avoiding a collapse rooted in one sector, without stifling the incredible innovation AI promises.
A tough balancing act.
It's historically very difficult to achieve.
And for you, for the individual learner trying to navigate this landscape day to day.
The main takeaway is just the absolute importance of enhancing your financial literacy around this. This dissonance between market narrative and economic reality.
The story versus the numbers.
Right. The narrative is exhilarating. The reality is that the underlying fundamentals are strained by closed-loop financing and concentration. You have to maintain critical awareness of these themes and understand financial cycles, recognizing the behaviors of a mania phase as it's happening.
So here's the final synthesis from your sources. The AI boom is a watershed moment. It's extraordinary capital flow. It's transformative technology. But, and this is the critical part, this momentum conceals a significant fragility steeped in narrow concentration and, you know, exuberant, often irrational sentiment.
And the need to value differentiated assets that can provide stability against corrections has, I think, rarely been higher. The traditional anchors, gold and silver, they stand out because they reflect these enduring qualities of diversification and safety that the current tech market just cannot offer.
This deep dive has laid bare the historical precedents and the structural risks we're facing, but I want to leave you with one final thought. It ties the history to the behavioral challenge right now. If history consistently shows that the mania phase feels the least risky while you are fully immersed in it, how do you personally distinguish between genuine technological displacement that justifies massive valuations and the sheer behavioral pressure of action bias compelling you to follow the crowd right up to the cliff's edge? That's the essential self-reflective question every investor has to answer right now.
That is a profound thought to end on.
Thank you for sharing your sources and letting us dive deep into the risks behind the AI boom. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.